find us on Google Plus. Just search the Generic Live Show and react. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Kim.
Thank you so much for joining us here on GLS, here on a Wednesday. It is Wednesday, the 4th of November. Yes, it is. 5 past the hour. Yes, it is. As we continue. I don't know why I'm doing that. Hey, let's not do that anymore, shall we? Thank you so much for joining us. We do have a little bit of a couple of PSA at the top of the hour. If you're listening live, you heard on the video version, you heard that I will be participating in the Extra Life Gaming Marathon this weekend. It will be happening from, did the commercial say? I don't know. It's not a commercial. It's a spot, technically. There you go. Yes, it will be Extra Life with the Geeko crew. We'll be here. We'll be trying to do the 24-hour period. It'll be interesting. It'll be my second time around, if I'm not mistaken. It'll be fun. It'll be a blast. I will be here from the beginning. It'll be a blast. Yes, it will. Yes, it'll help sick children in need. So again, if you want to help us help the children in need from those who are in traffic accidents or who are suffering from cancer when life-threatening events, it is a good cause. You can go help us, the team, at geek-io.net/extra-life, or you can look me up directly at extra-life.org/participant/Dale. And remember, your donations are fully tax deductible as well. And you know, we're not forcing you to do anything. They are one-time donations. There are monthly recurring donations if you so desire to choose that option. You can. But you do the one-time event. You do the one-time thing. It helps out tremendously. As much as you can give, and again, tax deductible. Geek-io.net/extra-life. Extra-life.org/participant/Dale will get you there as well. Well, we teased this story. Remember, when we tease stories, we really deliver. The world is opening up. The world is open. Meters? That's right. In Wyoming Crackgate. That sounds like a drug bust. But it's not really a drug bust, so you know, take that for what you will. A 700-meter crack in Wyoming. Opens up as nature revolts across the world. A mysterious crack in the earth, the size of 5 football fields, has opened up in Wyoming's Bighorn Mountains. No one can explain the gigantic tear in the rock, which measures an extraordinary 385 meters long and 48 meters wide. The gash, as the locals are calling it, don't know why, was discovered by hunting organization SNS Outfitter and Guides, which posted a photo on Facebook in late October. An engineer from the town of Rivertorn went to investigate, revealing that they appeared to have been an incredible 14 to 18 million meters of movement. He believed that the result of an extraordinary wet spring loosening the weaker ground under the cap rock, with the damp ground eventuating along the bottom side out. The fizzer sudden appearance in the latest in sting of unexpected geological events occurring worldwide in the last month. So then it goes on to list things as well. So the NASA finds 800,000-year-old Geophorus? I don't know. I can't say science. I can't do science. The deep quake, the powerful earthquake that struck Afghanistan and Pakistan a week ago.
Ooh.
Okay. Is perplexing seismologists because it started 210 kilometers underground. It's one of the worst quakes of the year, killing 380 people, destroying thousands of homes, and triggering disastrous landslides. It'll be known as the Deep Quakes. So there you go. Sinkhole cities. A sinkhole measuring around 150 meters wide has swallowed 6 houses and is closing in on 500 more in the Philippines. So the world is swallowing up houses. Wow, okay. As the number of sinkholes around the world soars, people in areas are prone to a problem are calling for mapping and predictions to pin down where the next one will be. I have no idea where the next one will be. These aren't good events. But I will say that some of these natural disasters, and particularly not earthquakes, aren't so much, and sinkhole cities aren't so much. I'm more referring to the original story for the 700 meter crack. These are awesome photos. It's not a good event at all, but it's an awesome photo to look at, and I will describe the photo for you. Think of a mountain range, and think of it being divided in two as well. So it's been divided in two with certain patches of land kind of just hovering there as well, to just kind of just hovering like little mini unexpected islands within this mountain range. It's an awesome landscape. It's not awesome because, you know, some people somewhere are just going to unexpectedly, where it actually gets too populous, that's where it becomes not so awesome anymore. But some of these are kind of just awesome to look at. So there you go. Meanwhile, in Vanuatu, there has been a major earthquake off Vanuatu. And I just wanted to bring this up here, but there is no tsunami warning present. So was detected. The quake hit at a depth of 131 kilometers, about 335 kilometers from the capital of Port Vila, the United States Geology Survey said, meaning it had less of an impact on the surface if it had been shallower. There were no immediate reports of damages or injuries. I was there, but I was there for an earthquake. Oh, that's a terrifying experience. I will tell that story on the show. We do have a bit of time in this segment, so I will tell that show, that story. So, at Earthquakes GA reports, Mag 7.5 Vanuatu Islands 21 Oct 2015, 8:52 Australian Eastern Daylight Time. And then it says longitude, latitude, depth 125 kilometers, info is preliminary. Quote, based on all available data, a destructive Pacific-wide tsunami is not expected. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Centre said. Government agency Geoscience Australia said the general threshold for undersea earthquakes that could potentially generate a tsunami was a magnitude 6.1 at a depth of 100 kilometres. Quote, it was potentially felt, but unlikely to cause any damages, seismologist Dan Jackson told the AFP, adding if there was there, adding there has been 27 tremors above a 7.0 in Vanuatu over the last 20 years. Quakes like this are a common occurrence over there. The region around Vanuatu and Solomon Islands is the most seismic in the world. Vanuatu's Natural Disaster Management Office Director, I'm not saying that name out loud, said there were no initial reports of damage or injuries, but he's still awaiting some information from the outer islands closer to the epicenter. Vanuatu is a part of the Ring of Fire, a zone tectonic activity in the Pacific that is subject to frequent earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. South Pacific Islands, the South Pacific Island was jolted by a 6.8 earthquake in late January and another 6.5 in February, but there were no reports of damage. So there you go. Vanuatu being shaken, not stirred. I like to be shaken, but not shaken. So, my experience with earthquakes over in Vanuatu. So, let's not do walk down memory lane, actually. Yeah, let's do walk down memory lane. Walk down memory lane with Dale Campbell in 3, 2. I'm just going to die on air. Year was 2012. Yeah, flashback, right? It was... what was the year? Up the year, it was 2012, but what month was it? When you're over in a country where, you know, you have no wall clocks, you have... Well, you have phones, but you have no real internet to keep track of time. Months are a blur to you. Anyway. Well, we kind of had to count up the days by flipping stuff in a calendar, so, you know, take that for what you will. But anyway, so I digress. Can't remember what it was. Me and the fellow volunteer, Rob, at the time, we were up visiting two ladies at about 40 minutes walk from us. They were at another placement at a school. I went over there to volunteer teach, by the way, for those who aren't in the know. So we were up there at the time, and we felt what would have been not a 7.3, but what would have easily been a 4. We were sitting in their hut on... They have a hut made of concrete. Not the hut itself, but the concrete floor. They have a concrete floor. And they... They were there, we were sitting on the floor, the girls were in there in the bedroom getting ready. We were going to go to church, I believe. Or were we just chilling? I think we're just chilling. We were about to go somewhere. We were about to go swimming, that's what it was. We're about to go swimming. And we felt this earthquake, and whoa, it's shocking how, you know, these things are so unpredictable, you know, you can't really predict. You still can't predict earthquakes. They're just so unpredictable. You kind of have to go, whoa, you know, you gotta kind of take it for what it is. You just gotta ride it out. There was no major damage in that earthquake, by the way. There was no damage that had occurred. But shocking that we, you know, I experienced an earthquake over in a foreign country. We were in our placement a little bit. We weren't only a couple of days into it as well. So, you know, we were into our trip. We weren't just kind of new and we go, whoa, earthquake. But yeah, fun story. I experienced an earthquake while in Vanuatu. How exciting. As we continue here on GLS, well, a study has shown that most Aussies believe that human-induced climate change is actually real. But in saying that, as your political biases show, depends on how much you believe in climate change. As we continue here on GLS for a Wednesday, I'm Dale Campbell. The time is 10:20. No, it's not 10:20, it's 11:20. I'm an hour behind. I'm in not daylight savings time. It's 11:20.
We finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday here on GLS. That's right, we are here for you as per always. We are here live and on your hard drive. We are everywhere. That's right, we are everywhere you want us to be and places that you don't really want us to be. Okay. I will stop that immediately. Things that people think that should be stopped immediately isn't being stopped immediately. I don't know what that's meant to mean. Anyway, so the CSIRO has conducted a study on climate change. Yeah, you would think that that's pretty normal stuff. But instead, it has gone all sorts of political, because why not? And we did start our broadcast at 10 p.m. There was an update during our broadcast tonight that has changed, that the Australian Labor Party has ceased the study conducted by the CSIRO that reveals telling things about climate change and political beliefs. This is interesting. The study revealed today that 78% of people believed climate change was real, and about 60% of the efforts were related to human activity, the efforts of climate change. It showed that 52% of Liberal voters thought that climate change was real, but natural. Liberal, natural. 42% of National voters believed climate change was real, but natural. 31% believed that it was real and natural. And 17% of Greens said that it was real and natural, which is interesting. While the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, has embarrassed the role of science and renewable energy. Oh, emphasized. That's the words. Emphasized, not embarrassed. Oh, well, we had a Prime Minister that embarrassed the role of science and renewable energy. Embrace. This one's embracing. I said embarrassed last hour, too. The role of science and renewable energy in the climate change policy. However, few changes have been done since Malcolm Turnbull took office. The environment Minister Greg Hunt said this week a change was the new Office of Climate Change and Renewable Innovation after the then Prime Minister Tony Abbott dumped the Climate Change Department. But the CSIRO study showed that many coalition voters remained skeptical in the role of humans in climate change activity. Only 22% of National voters and 28% of Liberal voters thought that human activity was related to climate change, compared to 58% of Labor voters and 76% of Green supporters that say that human activity was related to climate change. But Labour's environment spokesperson, Mark Butler, said that the Turnbull government has done, quote-unquote, nothing and, quote, make amends for the unconsiderable behaviour of Tony Abbott. He says that the report's findings showed that, quote, the Liberal government isn't interested in taking meaningful action, unquote. But Mr. Hunt asked in China this week whether, quote, those Abbott government days are over, unquote. He said, quote, you can have absolute confidence in support for renewable energy target and more generally for the renewable energy sector, unquote. Despite approving what Australia's largest coal, or would be Australia's largest coal mine, Andy Carmichael mine, Mr. Hunt said, quote, we are completely source blind in terms of the type of electricity supply. Ahead of global talks in Paris to set global emissions targets, he told the audience in China that was, quote, one of the indispensable pillars of a good global agreement. Okay, I have one thing to say on this, and one thing only. What? Since when did we have to make... I mean... And why are we making climate change this? I understand that the nature of climate change is very, very, very grey area, but I don't understand why... Why are we squabbling over it? Why aren't we working towards a solution? I vote for that. I vote for the fact that we work towards a solution instead of going, oh, he said this and he said that. I mean, you know, it's, I understand the nature of this game, but it's just, for a start, that's, it's not getting you anywhere that you have to go, well, he's not interested, therefore we have to do something, therefore meh. And then, you know, it just goes back and forward, and we're not actually talking about the issue, we're just attacking each other, which is always fun for everyone. But, you know, it's just, if we did something about this, we wouldn't be at this stage where we are, you know, talking about kind of, you know, if we're thinking about that sort, like, if we're talking to each other about climate change wouldn't be an issue. Also, why? What's it to a political party to kind of cease a report that an independent organisation did in the first place? It's got nothing to do with them at all. So why? I don't understand why a political party has ceased a report from a third party like the CSIRO. But you know what? I'm never going to understand it anyway. As we continue here on GLS, well, we've got some important news. Is your passport about to get an overhaul? As we continue here on GLS, it's 11:31.
This is The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday. Whether you're listening to us live via YouTube, Facebook, Google+, or whether you're listening to us on your hard drive via the podcast, we appreciate however you're consuming the show. We do appreciate your patronage to the show. We understand that you have a lot of choices, and we do appreciate when you choose to fly with America. Oh, okay. That was my previous job. We understand you've got a lot of choices, and we do appreciate you listening to GLS. So, good news, everyone. You know, we've had some down news. We've had some rants on the show tonight. It's been a fun broadcast. However, lost passports maybe have a thing of the past. Because Australia is going to be trialing a digital passport. The idea is still in the early stages, but would result... Let me try that whole sentence again. We call it a scripter. The idea is still in its early stages, but it was a result of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade staff competition aimed at boosting innovation. Miss Bishop said the cloud technology would be used to turn the passport chip into a purely digital one. Quote, we're in discussions with New Zealand, and if we were to put in place the appropriate requirements, including security, then it's something we'd trial and implement, she says. Just doing the same old thing year after year after year doesn't make Australia more productive, innovative, creative, and a prosperous country. So we're embracing new ideas, not for the sake of it, but in order to grow our economy and to make to do business in Australia and to create more jobs. Yes! Oh, I like that sentence. Hang on. We've got something for this. They've said a phrase that really gets me going here. Oh, here we go. Oh, it takes too long for me to queue up this clip.
Yes!
Yes, that's right. They've said something that triggers me off. Oh, yes. Okay, we'll get back to that. Wow, okay. Did I drink a Red Bull during the commercial break? What happened there? Okay. You know, that's one thing I despise in life, when people do the bok bok argument to me. But anyway, Miss Bishop... I didn't drink a Red Bull during the break, I promise. The video will prove that. Miss Bishop said... Off the rails! Miss Bishop says that the cloud passport would be grounded in absolute security. Quote, Australia prides itself on having one of the most secure passports in the world, embracing and harnessing new technologies might be able to do better, she says. Tens of thousands of Australia passports were reportedly registered as lost or stolen in the last financial year alone. Okay, so they've said something there in that article that really gets me going here. So I'm just going to embrace my inner argumentative side and just go for it, because that is something that doesn't come out often enough.
Yes!
That's right, they've hit the bingo spot there. So, they've said that this electric passport, will increase business to this country. Now, I don't know anyone. I live in a beautiful country with lots of beautiful attractions, if I do so say myself. Not that I'm biased at all. Not that I live here, and not that I live literally on one of the most beautiful places in the world, meaning the Great Barrier Reef. I was about to divulge something live on air that I probably shouldn't divulge, but, you know. I love the fact that I go down a path, and I stop myself from going on down a path. It's great. It's wonderful. It's called my daily life. But anyway, so we live in one of the most beautiful places. We're not trying to, as a tourist nation, drive visitors here, and we're not trying to. It's not that we're making it easier for them. We're making it easier for them, but we're making them more convenient. There you go. That's the one I'm looking for. We're making it more convenient for people to come over here and visit this great country of Australia. Because I don't know about you, but I want to be out in those tourist attractions I want to be out there. I don't want to be stuck in customs lines for centuries at a time. But that's not the point here. The point here is to kind of draw people here for business. Now, I understand that these types of passports are for high-end people and more technologically savvy people. I mean, I have my passport here on my... No, it shouldn't be on my desk. It should be in my safe. But I shouldn't reveal that live on the internet, but I did. I thought the fact that I stopped myself going on certain paths, but I don't stop myself going on other paths. But I'm looking at my passport now. It's my Australian passport. It's right there. In the safe, well, it's not in the safe, but it's out because I've had it out because, you know, I'm traveling to America. So, you know, I've had it out and I've had it out and around, but it should be in my safe with my Australian Constitution and my bubble. That's not the point here. The point here is there are people that still are going to revolt to the kind of paper kind of thing as well. And it's something that these technologically advanced people are going to go for because they are people who, you know, are technologically savvy. And of course, people who aren't are going for the paper version. That's what I'm going for there. It just took me 7 hours longer than what I thought it would. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's something that particular people are going to go for and others aren't, and it's well to go there, but it's not for tourism, it's for, you know, it's for business, so have fun with that. Meanwhile, well, the Hextet, we talked about universities before, I had my rant before, so here, news.com.au provides an article of why we should repay our hex debt when we die. Little grim thing to think about here on a Wednesday. Well, the idea of clawing back unpaid hex debt from the estates of the dead people may seem unsavory to some, and not as cruel as it sounds once you know the benefits from the current scheme. The Grattan Institute floated the idea of last year of an estimated bringing $800 million for the government. The issue has been put back on the table by the Federal Minister for Education, Simon Birmingham, who believes a range of conventional measures from failed higher education reforms should be reconsidered. In address to the AFR Higher Education Summit, Mr. Birmingham indicated it would be looking at old measures, including adding the write-off for hex loans at death, which former Minister Christopher Pyne ruled out last year. Grattan Higher Education Director Program Andrew Norton recommended the change last year after analysis found that debt being written off was held by secondary income earners of wealthy households. Quote, thankfully, it's not a common way that people die. Most people die in their 70s, but some don't pay their hex debt because they have been working part-time and don't earn enough to reach the $54,000 threshold to start paying their fees back. More than 20% of higher education will never be repaid, and Mr. Norton said this during a briefing the adult children of these people, not nerdy groups in the community. So there you go. Bringing it a death. I mean, it's not... Okay. In this episode, we've demonstrated that people come up with worse ideas. But I think it's not a bad idea. It's not a terrible idea to reduce... to kind of say, all right, the estate gets debt. Therefore, the debt gets made. It sucks that they have to take it out of the estate, but they did get the education in the first place, didn't they? Maybe. So, they also suggest that they lower the threshold to $45,000. So there you go. Also, they might do the hex scheme to vocational education students, whose wages aren't typically as high as university students. So then Brigham will launch a new report that highlights old policy options that are worth re-examining. I think, you know what? I don't know. I don't know whether I support this or not. I mean, I advocate that I don't want a debt going to my grave, but that's more of a personal vendetta. I don't want a debt overhanging me when I go to death to my deathbed, because that's just a personal thing as well, and I don't want to burden, you know, heaven forbid I have children, but any particular people on, you know, extended sides of my potential future family. That's a really long sentence to say, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't want to burden them with a debt that I curated. That's just not something that I want to do. I just think that, but going to the grave will make sure that the debt is paid. I don't know. I think I'm probably more in support of lowering the threshold because to $45,000, but again, then people aren't earning as much, and then people are struggling to stay within the social economical class that we were talking about at the beginning of the broadcast in relation to privatization and deregulation of the universities. I think that lowering the threshold would mean that the money gets potentially paid off quicker. If you're working part-time, you're working up to 36 hours a week. So that is, would that be 30, 45 grand? I can't do the math offhand, but you know what I mean. Like, there is more chance the debt will be paid off and you don't have this massive debt going to your grave, and to lower that threshold down to $45,000, that makes it more accessible to other people as well. So I'm, you know, there are many ways, you know, to kill a pig, or whatever the hell the old saying was, to stone a pig, there you go. But I think you're never going to find the right way. So you're going to have to find a way that most people approve of as well. So it's a tough balancing act. And hex is not an easy thing as well. Student loans aren't easy to kind of balance well in the general scheme of things, because they are so complicated and they are so regulated as well. So you kind of have to juggle it and then kind of go, well, we need a reformer. You have to constantly fine-tune these things, because if you don't fine-tune it, it kind of just goes by the wayside and goes out of date. As we continue here on GLS, we have an outrageous story. We have a heartfelt story to cap off the broadcast. It involves a zoo. It involves penguins. Who doesn't love those two things? Who doesn't love the zoo, and who doesn't love penguins? It's 11:49.
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday here on GLS. Sometimes I just we actually, this is a perfect time to bring up the bumper music as well. I think we don't bring up the bumper music. We do use PodSafe music for our bumper music. Yes, if you didn't think it was obvious, yeah, it's a thing that happens, you know, not being able to play licensed music. But, you know, some of them are fun. That was a fun little musical bit. Speaking of musical bit, we are going to peel back the curtain here just a second, because I was doing some mic tests before the show, and you know, we are a fun broadcast. We broadcast here for 2 hours, you know, we prep the show, we do the run sheet, which is an internal little thing here at GLS, and it's amazing some of the stuff that we come up with sometimes. That I come up with, actually, in fact, you know, I have a big mouth, and you know, I tend to do things to kind of put myself in a little bit of a box. So I have for you 36 seconds of what is going to be the best clip I think anyone has ever heard in recent history. It's 36 seconds of me doing Drake. Enjoy.
All right, testing 1, 2, 1, 2. You should call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. Call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. And I know when that hotline bling. That can only mean one thing. I know when that hotline bling. That can only mean one thing. Ever since I left the city.
Yeah, that was me, ladies and gentlemen. There is a setting on my broadcasting software here that allows me to raise and lower people's voices if they so desire to, because masking people's identities is apparently a thing. So, you know, enjoy what you will of that. It was amazing. I had everyone laughing here in the studio. Meanwhile, penguins! Yeah, clip that out too. The staff at the Melbourne Zoo discovered a grisly scene in the zoo's penguin exhibit this morning when 14 penguins were found. Hello, big boy. Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. I shouldn't be cheering a penguin massacre. Oh, my God. I thought, okay. Clickbait, ladies and gentlemen. Do not click on clickbait because the headline reads, Penguins Found at Melbourne Zoo. So, of course, I wrote the tease for this broadcast for two segments, which I only used one of them, for two segments about fluffy penguins being found at a zoo. Now, no, ladies and gentlemen, you are probably thinking cute, fluffy, found in the zoo, but you would be mistaken, much like me. They are found mauled to death. I don't know what to do with myself. This is embarrassing. Why on earth would they bait me like this? I don't understand why people use baiting headlines, but you know what? I've told you the story now. I might as well just tell you the story. And I feel terrible that I've endorsed mauling penguins. But anyway, 14 penguins were found mauled to death by a fox. Bodies were found today after a fox broke into the exhibit overnight. 15 penguins survived the rampage and have all been checked by the zoo veterinarians and have moved into a secure area. Wildlife's manager, Justin Valentine, says that the surviving penguins were uninjured and they are all settling in their temporary accommodation. Keepers at the zoo have suspected that in the past week, the fox managed to enter the zoo, but traps and cameras have unsuccessfully located. Additional measures have now been taken to further fox-proof the zoo. I mean, okay, two things are at play here. One, don't read it. Don't read too much into a baiting headline, you know, because some people might take that the wrong way, you know? I did. I mean, it's embarrassing. You know, I tease the story. I have it written here. I have it here. Penguins found at zoo. That's the headline. And what I read, lo and behold, it's about mauling penguins. But second of all, why didn't the zoo have rabbit-proof fences anyway? Yeah. It's confusing. No one will ever know why, but pray, will you, for the penguins. Pray for the penguins. And that sums up our broadcasting day. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. It's 11:59.
This has been a Geek.io production.
Copyright 2015.
Geek.io.
Geek.
You're listening to a program of the Chef Wonder Media Network. For this and other shows, visit chefwondermedia.net.